rushing out the door. The winner isn't last. We rise up through the floor. You jump the hatch and then come crashing down. The best show off of all.
Cracking off, it's your man Ricky Reed from Wallpaper. And you're listening to CJUM, Winnipeg's finest.
Hey everyone, it's me, the Album Authority, and I hate to break it to you guys, but these are not live episodes of Album Authorities. This is previously aired episodes. Like all great movements, I need my time to go back, to refresh, to regroup so that we can build this movement stronger. They asked me which episodes do I want. I said I didn't care because all I make is classics, all I make is hits. So enjoy these previous episodes of Album Authority, and I will come back to you guys in September with more fresh, revolutionary, world-changing radio. Hello and welcome to Album Authority. I just had to move the microphone there because it was very far away from me and I didn't realize. Hello and welcome to Album Authority. I am your host, the one and only Album Authority. And guys, it is good to be back. For you guys, you know, it's been weeks since I've done a live episode of the show. For you guys, it's only been like it's been a week like normal, you know. You guys all, I hope, tuned in to last week's live episode. I kept forgetting that I was even on air, and then I would have friends text me about the show, and I'd be like, I forgot I was on today, because I recorded, you know, it was three weeks of pre-recorded episodes, and I had done them like a month ago, so I had honestly totally forgotten that Album Authority was a thing that was happening over the winter break whatsoever. So, yeah. I hope everybody had a good winter break. Or if you aren't a student here at the U of M, I still hope you guys had a good few days with your family during the holidays. But I know how you guys have been feeling. You guys have felt empty. You guys have felt this gnawing feeling right at the fringes of your brain. Like a shadow, like creeping over you. Because you guys haven't heard a live episode of Album Authority in weeks. Sure, yeah, you guys all sat down and, you know, you guys were sitting around the fire every Thursday with your whole family, even on Boxing Day, to listen and learn to Album Authority. But it just hasn't been the same. It hasn't felt the same. You know, it hasn't felt like I am right now at the university speaking to you here as if... Well, I was going to say as if we're on an equal playing field, but let's be honest with each other. We are not on an equal playing field. I am far above you guys, but that's okay. You know, those episodes that I made, I'm going to be honest, they weren't the best. If you didn't listen to them, it's not that big of a deal. By the time I recorded the third episode, I was like completely tired and out of things to even say. So, in defense, it was the middle of exams. I had no energy and not a lot written, so... whatever. But today, new creative life is being blown into Album Authority, as now we are beginning a new season here on the show, and I'm pretty excited for it. For the next few months, we are going to be covering the musical evolution of Manchester's music, mostly rock music. I've been very excited to do this season for a while now. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at this one city, this center of the world, Manchester. And we are going... Manchester is a city that honestly has had an insane, disproportionate output of incredible rock bands. The British in general... the English have had a very insane output of rock bands. It's kind of a running known thing here on the show that I'm a known Anglophile when it comes to English music, but Manchester in particular has had a kind of a ridiculous output. Because, like, from this window of time where almost all of the music I'm going to be covering was made, you know, the late 70s to the 90s, Manchester was this poor, working-class city, decreasingly industrial, with this huge cultural output that was just so disproportionately important, high quality, and popular across not only, like, the country, but kind of all around the world. Full disclosure, I am a rock guy and kind of, you know... And kind of all the main line of bands I want to talk about fall into my particular personal interests. But I am going to try, if I can find enough try and cover more stuff that I otherwise couldn't and otherwise have found out about. So this is going to be done chronologically. So we're going to start in the late 70s. I think today we're starting in 1978. So that kind of shows you when I start to tune in for music. And I don't really know what to do earlier, and I can't really be bothered. I'm not huge into 60s music. I was just talking about this with the host of a show that used to be after me called 60s Expression. You know, obviously all about the 60s, but I have, like, zero 60s knowledge. I listen to a lot of the Beatles. I've never listened to The Doors in full. That's about my whole 60s knowledge. Who's that guy? I'll do it my way. Who's that guy? Everybody knows him, and if you're listening, you know. He also did Blue Moon, you know, Manchester City and all that. Frank Sinatra, there you go. Okay, so all of that gets me to today's album, and that is the 1978 album by Buzzcocks, Another Music in Another Kitchen. I believe is the title. Yeah, okay. No, sorry, Another Music in a Different Kitchen. Wow, my professionalism here. So we're starting with punk, which is kind of like the year zero for alternative rock music in England, or kind of all around the world, but especially in England. It's hard to properly explain how huge punk was and how important it was for music and for culture, but it kind of completely changed conceptions of what was possible for music and what was commercially viable. You know, the Sex Pistols and the Clash became huge national sensations, which was unheard of before. The Buzzcocks, are kind of that for Manchester, just to a smaller degree, which is kind of fitting considering that, you know, The Clash and Sex Pistols are these huge London bands and grew out of a huge London scene that wasn't really present in Manchester, at least to the same degree. But this is kind of year zero of when it really starts. And so for that, I'm covering their first album, my favorite, and kind of narrowly better than their second album, Love Bites. I haven't really listened past that. I'm going to be real with you guys. This isn't an album I'm hugely passionate for. It's a good album. Honestly, I'm not huge about Buzzcocks either. It's not something I play often. You know, it just doesn't do it as much for me. But it is very good. And I think it's really important for everything going forward. It just sounds a little, I guess, simplistic, which I will get into. But, you know, this album is really interesting. It's really clean and polished, especially for a punk album. And it's catchy and pretty tight. I think it's interesting to note that punk musically, and this album in particular, was not very complicated and different from pop. You know, punk, especially early punk like Buzzcocks and the Sex Pistols and kind of the Clash, was essentially just pop music, but in harsher tones and kind of performed with an edge to it that otherwise wasn't there. You know, on the whole, I mean, punk is far from pop, but the actual music itself is pretty close in complexity and stylistically. Not stylistically, but musically. So I think that's kind of an interesting theme and tone to think about and pick up on as I play this album now, starting with the opening track, which is Fast Cars. Thank you. That was Fast Cars, No Reply, You Tear Me Up, and Love Battery off of Buzzcocks' 1978 album, Another Music in a Different Kitchen. I keep wanting to put the Buzzcocks as opposed to Buzzcocks. I think it's because, you know, it's The Clash, The Sex Pistols, or is it Sex Pistols? It's The Clash, I know that. Oh, it is just Sex Pistols. Huh. I don't like that. Honestly, I don't like when bands don't have a the for their name. You know, like The Smiths, The Cure, The Talking Heads, but it's actually just Talking Heads. I don't like that. So everybody fix that up right now. So I think those first few songs really show what I mean by the core of punk, or at least punk as it was then, just being these fast, simple, and short songs that musically aren't too complex or different from pop. You know, it's all guitar. It's all, like, front heavy. There's barely any bass. It's just super boom, in your face, bam. You know, really, like, really quick, punchy songs. And I think that this almost, like, pop edge was what helped make punk so huge because of just how accessible it was. This is almost, honestly, I might get like a, this might be a sin, but this is kind of blasphemy to say, but the simplicity of the simplicity of punk certainly helped make it become the cultural explosion that it was. And now the degree to which that comes from the simple fact that music was simpler and had developed a ton in a way that punk kicked off, you know, with technology or just experimentation, but is up for debate, but it doesn't really cancel out what I'm saying. You know, these songs are very widely appealing. You know, I think I could play them for my stepdad or my dad and he would like them. Meanwhile, I played Joy Division for my dad and he was not really a big fan. And I was kind of struck by just how modern they feel. Like, they almost now sound like what we call post-punk. Or, no, sorry, pop-punk. Like, the degree to which this sounds different from Green Day, in my opinion, is pretty minimal. Now, I'm no punk purist, and I'm low-key, like, kind of a poser in all music I listen to and love. But that does kind of make pop-punk closer to the original punk than a lot of hardcore punk, you could say. Now, I feel like saying that is a bit of a sin, and I'm going to be, like, banished, but it might be kind of true when you listen to this older punk. You could also say, it's not, because genres evolve, and punk's inherent need for subversion and harshness has kind of pushed the boundary for what is punk in a way that pop punk and punk like Buzzcocks and Sex Pistols have kind of been left behind in a certain way. But, or you could just say what I said and say that, you know, that makes pop punk closer to original punk. And you could be cast aside and expelled from the punk world that you already weren't in. Like, I am not in any way in these subcultures. I'm not, you know, I love the music of these subcultures. I kind of love the culture of these subcultures. But, you know, I'm like the guy at a punk, I'm the guy at a punk show who's like standing there on the side nodding, but I do like to get involved in the mosh pits and everything. And I do not just stand there, but I feel like I have the character of the guy at the punk show who's like, I really like what they're doing here experimentally. I think it's really pushing the genre forward, as opposed to the guys who are kicking each other. And I think that's why this album and a lot of early punk can feel so bizarrely pop now, because of just how music has evolved. But if you were in this, keep in mind, if you were in the 70s hearing this, this would have probably blown your mind. And I think that kind of helps show why punk was so important, because of just the degree to which it helped push the boundaries and make it so much more acceptable and wanted in music. I mean boundary pushing. You know, people for the first times in their lives really saw that they could make simple, brash music, and it was commercially viable. And not only that, but another degree to which punk mattered was the ease of access. You know, most punk bands could barely play their instruments. Most were working class, and in London specifically, you know, they were squatting in unused buildings. So imagine you're a working class teen in Manchester or London, and you see these guys who honestly aren't very good instrumentally. I mean, the Buzzcocks actually really good instrumentally, they're really polished, but I mean punk in general. And they start super small, you're going to feel insanely inspired and decide you can do it too. And that's what people did. And the degree to which that is true, that that's the inspiration, is huge when you actually look at the history of punk and post-punk in Manchester. Like, first of all, so Sex Pistols came to Manchester to perform. And I believe it was Buzzcocks who opened for them and invited them to play in Manchester. And at that one Sex Pistols show was Morrissey, Ian Curtis, I believe, who's the bassist for Joy Division? It's on the tip of my tongue that I really can't remember. Peter Hook. Yeah, all of Joy Division was there. Morrissey was there. I think multiple Smiths members were there. Some members of The Fall were there. Like, it's this one show, the kind of this year zero of where all of this music and culture just really spawns. And you can even see that. And it's so interesting when you look at how, when we're looking back now with social media and everything, how the actual physical presence of a band, like Sex Pistols going to Manchester, was so huge for the culture there, because they physically had to, because a lot of this music was not being played on the radio. So the only way you could hear it was if your buddy like gave you some cassettes or some demos, or you just went to the show. So it's so interesting how that can just, this one like event can spawn everything. And we also can't discount the fact that punk was just really cool. You know, 9 years before, the Beatles couldn't play I Am the Walrus because they said let your knickers down in a song, and it was banned on the BBC. And now, 9 years later, Johnny Rotten is saying he's the Antichrist. It's always funny in retrospect to look back on moralism and conservative shock from music that we consider like kind of your dad's music now. Like the other day in my history class, somebody was talking about how in 1967 the Doors were controversial or banned on the radio, or they had to at least edit it because they said She Gets High and Break On Through to the Other Side, and that was like a complete faux pas in 67. Same year as I'm the Walrus, by the way. So, you know, the Doors are another band that I have to get into. It's like another glaring hole in my music listening. Honestly, sometimes I'm happy there's these big holes for bands that I haven't listened to yet, because it just kind of gives me new music to listen to and new stuff I can later appreciate. Like, because like 2 years ago, I was new to all of this music and this world. So it was just like constant new music and new sounds and new cultures that I could get into. And now, like 2 or 3 years later, oh my God, almost three. Three or four now, Jesus. I can feel like I can like way better contextualize and fit these albums in my brain of like what they are and the genres that they're in, which is nice in a certain way, but you know, it kind of gets rid of that like boyish joy of this new stuff. I can only imagine what that's going to be like in like 10 years when, I just have listened to so much more. Actually, I've been trying to listen to less music lately and to try and better appreciate and return to the music that I already know and have listened to. Basically, I'm just too cultured, okay? I'm too authoritative. I have to slow down so I don't just eclipse the average small-minded listener like you guys. Anyways, we'll get back into the album with 16.
Okay. No way. wish I was 16 again. That things would be such fun. All the things I do wouldn't say. Well, I must have fun that when you're 21, 21. Alright. Okay. No way. We'll be right back.
was a little stronger than I'd be bold.
That was 16, I Don't Mind, and Fiction Romance. My favorite song of those three is the first. I love the riff throughout 16. It's this, like, really interesting riff that just makes this, like, droning feeling throughout the song. Like, here. And then that plays throughout the whole song. I love that. I love that riff that just goes throughout. I'm a sucker for that. And, I think it's really interesting, this kind of droning feeling throughout the song. And I think it's cool for 70s punk and kind of helps show where some of this music is going. But I'll get into more of that later when it gets way more clear and way more important for this album. Fiction Romance feels really similar to like a song off Love Bites. Like, you know, what is that? What's the most popular Buzzcocks song? Have you ever fallen in love with someone that you want? You know it. Come on. Come on, let me find the chorus here. You guys know this. Yeah, this song. Great song. But, you know, the most famous Buzzcocks song. Really good, by the way. But, yeah. So that really... Fiction Romance almost feels like a precursor to that in a way. And it does really just feel like a song off Love Bites, you know, with the whole album being centered around love and relationships or kind of the inability or failing at them. But, yeah. I also need to address maybe some sort of, like, elephant in the room that you guys are all thinking. Like, Mr. Authority, Cooper, why are you talking about Manchester at all? You are very clearly not a Mancunian. You are very clearly not English. So why do you care so much, Mr. Authority? Well, my obsession with this city is kind of, like, ridiculous at this point. So it all starts, you know, some of my favorite bands are from the city. My favorite band's the Smiths, okay? I love Joy Division. I love New Order. That's kind of cheating. You know, I love Oasis. I love the Stone Roses. I love the Happy Month. All of these bands that I love are all Manchester bands. So... first of all, that's kind of the huge point and really why I'm doing this season as a whole, to just talk about the incredible musical output of this city. But my obsession really went into overdrive when I got into soccer and Manchester City. I became a City fan when I was talking to a professor and student when they were talking about soccer, and they asked me if I had a favorite team, and I just kind of shrugged and said I'll support whatever team that... Oasis supported, and I was very convinced it was Man United until I was told otherwise. I cannot even imagine I would be a Man United fan. That is a disgusting proposition. So that led me to becoming a Man City fan. And now, like, half as a joke, but half from genuine interest, I've just kind of become really interested and honestly obsessed with North England, but especially Manchester. I even have some friends who are from, well, they're not from Manchester, but they're from Yorkshire. So they think it's really funny that I'm like the first, you know, like there's weebs for Japan. I'm like the first weeb for Manchester specifically. I think it's kind of ridiculous, but kind of embarrassing, but I've become obsessed with all of these things English, and it's gotten to the point where I could say that, you know, Trafford, the stadium where the neighborhood in which Old Trafford, you know, the Man United stadium is not technically in Manchester proper, and it's only in the metro area. So technically, Man U is outside of the city of Manchester. I also know that there's about a 6 or 7K distance from the two stadiums, so I could, theoretically, if I were to go there one day, run from the Etihad to Old Trafford. You know, that'll be a, I'm going to do that whenever I do want to go to Manchester. So, also, I feel this sort of kinship with the city because of its similarities to Winnipeg. First, it's a minor city of the country. It's far from the capital. And it's far from the more dense, focused on core of the country. And it was indeed, it was deindustrialized, and it was past its peak of relevance. And really, in the period of the music we're talking about, was very past its peak and in a period of decay. But nevertheless, created incredible culture and music. And I feel like this is something Winnipeg could be for Canada, and some degree has been. Like, we have an incredible music city here, probably in large part because of our geographic isolation and kind of cheaper rent, so people can more easily afford being musicians. And I really wish and hope that Winnipeg could become like Manchester in that respect and regenerate itself in large part from culture. Because, like, let's face it, Winnipeg has seen better days, and it kind of sucks, but it has the potential to be so much more, and almost every band I'm going to talk about hated Manchester and really wanted to leave, and that feels, for Winnipeggers, very relatable, and but nevertheless, through them even wanting to leave, they helped create a bigger city through the cultural output, and in, you know, if we're lucky, maybe in 20 to 30 years, some kid from Manchester can become obsessed with Winnipeg and starts calling hats toques and all that. So, you know, I didn't expect this to be very sincere and hopeful, but yeah, here's the Buzzcocks again with Autonomy. That was Autonomy and Moving Away from the Pulse Beat. Those songs are by far some of the best off this album, and I think they really show what I love about this album, which is the back half and its experimentation, especially that last song with its 5-minute runtime with this repetitive drone sound just throughout. Like I said, punk is full of these fast, quick, and simple songs, but those last two are really good at dragging it out in a really interesting way. I think I'm being shut down here. Nope, okay. So, and these songs really break that mold and kind of show where this music can go and really was going. One thing that always blows my mind is how overlapped punk and post-punk were. Like Joy Division's Closer came out the same year as London Calling. It's kind of insane. So this is the back part of that album is my favorite part, and you really get this sense of where it's going. And you know, with the with these bass lines that just become so important and so central to the song. Here it's a lot more higher up, like it's a lot more in your face. I don't even know if that's really a bass line or if that's more so just the guitar riff that just keeps going on in a way that a bass would. And that's what makes it my favorite part of the album. So, and this bass line becomes such a huge part of post-punk and goth. I think my favorite part... I think my favorite early punk album is The Clash's self-titled. That album is fantastic and has this rougher edge to it, and that's what makes it my favorite punk album. You know, when, as I've said, this music is so close to pop and simple. When you have a harsher vocalist and delivery like Joe Strummer on that album especially, it really gives that album a leg up over the others. I've been listening to it a lot recently, and I highly recommend you do too. Honestly, more so than Buzzcocks' Another Music in a Different Kitchen. It is, after all, this is the Manchester season, so I can't really cover all of England's music evolution. It is kind of funny that I'm saying I like another album more, but you know, it's the Clash is a London band. I can't do the Clash. Come on, I gotta stick by the parameters that I set, you know, for myself. Honestly, it's not the first and last time this song goes off the beaten path, so... and this is pretty minor. I do want to say right before I go that one thing I do that is really interesting about that Clash album is its anti-American sentiment that is in the song with called I'm So Bored with the USA that... kind of becomes huge in the 90s when bands like Blur really take on anti-Americanism or really kind of trying to find a pro-British way to move out from American culture. And it's you can really trace it to even here in 78. So I'm going to play that song, and then we're going to go into the Weaker Than's Time Zero for this week's Canadian Song of the Week. And yeah, goodbye. I will see you all next week. I don't
So you watch the sunrise sinking, and she's talking in her sleep. Dream of how alone she was. Tomorrow when you keep all those promises to someone, in a mirror you will find at your parents' house in 1989.
To 60 years ago, people were introduced to
rock and roll high school.
101.5 UM FM.
I'm Riff Randall, rock and roller.